We stopped at the point where we were discussing spherical means. We hadn't done anything with a spherical mean other than taking it. So I'd like to, oh, and differentiating it. So I'd like to remind you of that formula. From there we can go on. So it's actually our definition. And it's definition 4.3. This is a repetition of what we've talked about. It goes as follows. I'd like to take H, a continuous function on Rn. And then the spherical mean of H is the following thing. You take H, and you take its spherical mean, that's a function of x, and an auxiliary variable r, which is a one-dimensional variable, which is you normalize integral over x minus y equals r. So integrate in the sphere around x of radius r the values of y, and then you normalize it. So it's the average of h on that sphere. And I want to remind you, so this is, so it's the average of H on the sphere. It's an n minus 1 dimensional sphere. It's of radius R, and it's about the point X. And so there's a few properties of this. One is a convenient change of variables formula, which says I can also write this as being 1 upon omega n integral over the unit sphere of h, and I start at x and I go out by by distance r in the xi direction, the unit spherical mean. That puts the r in a place which is where it's easy to differentiate. Another reminder is if I take the limit as r goes to 0 of m of h xr, as long as I'm in the continuous functions, you look at this expression, that's pretty clearly h of x. So from the mean of h, I can recover h. And also makes us think that we're not adding information, we're just moving it around in a different way. So those n minus 1, those n plus 1 variables really only have n variables amount of information in them. I just messed it up by changing R, by integrating over R. Another property we had was that M of H of X R is even function of R, and that's interesting. And, well, that also means that R derivative is an odd function of R. And so, in particular, if I take d by dr of m h x r and I evaluate it as r goes to 0, I'm going to get 0, which is an interesting fact. And then one more thing, that's one derivative. One more thing is if I take two derivatives, I want to remind you of the Darboux equation. Which goes as follows. Well, it's along the lines of my comment that I haven't added any information by adding another parameter. So there's a relation between how the function behaves in X and how it behaves in R. And one way to quantify that relation is a differential equation. It's always nice to quantify information in differential equations, at least from our point of view, right? So that says if I take Laplacian with respect to x of m of h, that's a function of x and r, that's equal to, and I guess I want to be able to have two derivatives to play with, otherwise we have to make distributional excuses that I don't want to make at this point. It's the same as taking dr partial r squared plus n minus 1 over r partial r of m h of x and r. Interesting. Interesting. And our proof of it was a calculation. And I believe that's where we stopped last time. Any corrections to that? No, I think that's where we stopped last time. What does it have? So the question is, what does it have to do with the wave equation? Well, clearly, the Laplacian is invariant under rotations in x. So the wave equation is also invariant under rotations in x. The wave equation is also invariant under rotations in x. So you'd imagine rotations, or maybe averages over rotations, play a role in the wave equation. Well, that's sort of a group theoretic excuse for studying spherical means. Maybe a little more concrete one is the following set of blackboards I'm going to fill out, showing that we can give an explicit expression four solutions of the wave equation in terms of spherical means of the solution and of the initial data. So that leads me to do the following thing. Let's consider the wave equation. For x in, I'm going to take an n-dimensional x, and of course t is in one dimension. That's of the form partial t squared u minus Laplacian u equals 0. That's equation one of the day. With data, of course, there's a wide variety of data one can give for this equation, but the most common is initial data, and the most common initial data is to ascribe values for u at time equals 0 and values for its time derivative, which I've written before like this. Let's solve it. I'm going to deduce a solution expression by assuming I have a solution and then manipulating it. And I'll arrive at a formula in the end, which then we can stare at and understand that's the solution operator. So let's take a solution, u of x, t, and average it. So now I want to take the spherical means of u. Well, the spherical mean of u is a function of x and r and t. And I guess I might as well write it in one of the forms above, just to be explicit. So it's 1 over omega n, integral over c in the unit sphere. Let's write it this way, c in the n 1 minus 1 dimensional unit sphere of u of x plus r c t dxc, and let's see, why don't I simply take its time derivative and see if it's going to satisfy an equation for us. So then take dt squared of mu of x, r, and t is equal to 1 upon omega n integral c in the n minus 1 dimensional unit sphere partial t squared u of x plus r c t dxc, and of course that's equal to 1 upon omega n integral over c in the unit sphere of Laplacian x u of x plus r c t, because this is t derivatives of u related to x derivatives of u, and just evaluated that at that point. And of course, that's the same thing as, so it's partial t squared mu is equal to And now the x doesn't interact with any of this differentiation, so Laplacian comes outside. So it's Laplacian x mu. So pretty clear. Well, I could have said averaging commutes with the equation, or averaging commutes with every operator in the equation. So the partial, so the spherical mean also satisfies the wave equation. However, if you look on the board directly above, we have an expression for Laplacian x of the mean in terms of one derivatives with respect to one parameter, r, one variable r. So that says we've derived what's called the Euler, so the Euler-Poisson Darboux equation. Just by plugging this in with that, which is partial t, this is my equation 2, partial t squared, the spherical mean of u, is equal to partial r squared plus n minus 1 over r, partial r, of the spherical mean of u. Interesting. And of course, what should the data be? With initial data, well, what should that be? Well, pretty clearly, the spherical mean of u is a function of x, r, and t. But let me evaluate t equals 0. It should be the spherical mean of f. And the spherical mean of d by dt of u, which is d by dt is the spherical mean of u by the same reasoning above, at t equals 0, should be the spherical mean of g of x and r. And let's think about trying to solve this equation. What advantage does this have? I guess it's a dimensional advantage. That is, x is in n dimensions, r is in one dimension. So, of course, I don't fully understand what m of u is, but I know that I can recover u from m of u by taking a limit as r goes to 0. And furthermore, in r, I know that m has to satisfy this. In p and r, I know that m has to satisfy this equation. Interesting. So what turns out is this parameter, as people know who study Bessel's equation, this parameter plays an important role. And it depends on, and it's even if n is odd, and it's odd if n is even, and it's better if it's even. That is, it's better if n is odd. So we're going to see right now a divergence in the solution method, also in character of the solution, that is, in physical phenomena manifested by solutions of the wave equation, depending on the evenness or oddness of that parameter. So there'll be two cases. N odd and N even. And I'm going to discuss them all, of course, but just to let you know that when N is odd, in both cases, the solutions of the equation exhibit finite propagation speed, and we'll see that from the solution method, and we can also see it from other methods. But did that fall from the top or the bottom? Good God! Good thing I wasn't looking. When n is even, so the difference is, they're both finite propagation speed, but the difference is seen in the sharp Huygens, that's the weak Huygens principle. The difference is seen in the sharp Huygens principle. When dimension, I'm just telling you what we're going to see. We're working on deriving this. When n is odd, the equations have a sharp Huygens principle. That is, you stand here, there's an explosion over there, the shock wave hit, delta function, the distribution of solution hits you and then goes away and it's silence again. However, if we lived in 2 or 4 or 6 dimensions, you'd sit here in silence until the sound of the explosion hit you, and then it would pass, but you'd continue hearing it with a certain lower decay rate. I'm going to show you that. good thing we don't live in two dimensions, because I would talk to you and then there'd be this continuing fuzz as the decay of my solution. I mean, given that we talk using solutions to the wave equation, which we mostly do. Even in sign language, we use solutions to the wave equation, just a different wave. So, it gets slightly calculational. So what I want to do is dimension 3 first. We've already done dimension 1. Both of them are odd. Both of them have sharp Huygens principle, the strong Huygens principle. So let's first first do n equals 3. So So I really want, I mean, that's where the solution method is clear. That's where we live, too. So it's, I think we live. So it reminds me of a story of Feynman. Shall I tell you my story of Feynman? See, it's just a story for you about these famous physicists. But for me, I was there. So it's my own, one of my few apocryphal Feynman stories where I invented it. I mean, I saw it. So there's a guy who comes. I was at Caltech for 3 years. It was my first job. And the physics colloquium was really good, so I went very often. And Feynman always sat in the front row, and he always tried, you know, always made a comment, sort of expressing his personality and his opinions. So there was a fellow who came and talked about string theory and 11-dimensional space, or maybe it's 10, and then 23-dimensional bosonic space, you know, these incredibly brash and highly speculative things. Which I think still are incredibly brash and highly speculative. So at the end of that, so Feynman didn't really comment until the end, where he stood up and says, "You fellows really don't pay any attention to experiment, do you?" The experiment being, well, you wake up in the morning and space looks three-dimensional and time progresses in its fourth dimension. I like that comment. So first do n equals 3. That's my excuse for it, which is, let's do the following thing. That is, I have to solve, let's put n equals 3 here. So I have to solve partial t squared mu is equal to partial r squared plus n minus 1 is 2 over r, partial r mu. And let's simply substitute v equals r m u. And let's just try that. Partial r squared of r m u is equal to, of course, it's r times partial r squared of m u, but plus another term. Plus two, on two occasions, I can hit the r with one derivative and the m the other. So it's 2 partial r mu. And if I actually do the following thing, so let me put this upstairs. So partial t squared of r mu is r times this. So it's equal to r times partial r squared of mu plus 2, there's an extra r, I better divide by it, r, partial r, mu. And that, by the formula I just wrote, is equal to partial r squared of r, mu. Therefore, v satisfies the one-dimensional wave equation in R and T. That's the simple fact. Very beautiful, but very simple. And so that means that we should study the, that means we can express the solution of V in terms of the D'Alembert formula. So that simply says that V of R and T is equal to, and that's why this first bit last week I reminded you of that simple and beautiful D'Alembert formula. It's one half v of r 0, sorry, r plus t 0 plus v of r minus t 0 plus 1 half integral from r minus t to r plus t rho v of rho 0. Rho v t of rho 0 d rho. And I'm leaving something out because I guess v is a function of x, r, and t. I'm just suppressing the x. I guess I should have put it in everywhere or left it all out. It's a function of x. X is a parameter now. I'm seeing how it acts in r and t. That's interesting. Now, I should write this rather in terms of, the initial data. So I haven't said what the initial data is, but v is equal to this, so let's just pick up our initial data from this rule. So I'm going to say that by saying r m u at r and t, at x, r, and t, is equal to, I'm just going to write everything down, 1 half. What's v of r plus t 0? It's r plus t. That's the r, when you substitute r plus 2, m of u. Oh, sorry. When is it at 0? It's m of f. So that's the means of f at r, at x, r plus t. Then I have to add r minus t, mean of f at x, r minus t. You agree? That's that first line. And the second line is plus 1 half integral of r minus t to r plus t, rho, the means of g, the spherical mean of g, but at what point? The point rho goes from r minus t to r plus t, so x rho, d rho. I guess that's what it is. A slight adjustment of this. Remember, the spherical means are even. I mean, stand at the center point on an average in a ball around me. It doesn't matter if I start averaging over there or over there, I still get the same answer. So it's, m is even in r. So let's do the following substitution. I'd rather make this, let me do it by, it's cheating to do it on the board by eraser. Sorry, guys. Let's make this t plus r, t plus r. But if m is even, r times m is odd. So I just switched those around, but now I'm going to get a minus sign. If I take r minus t to t minus r, it's going to be minus t minus r, t minus r. You agree? It's odd. Now, also I want to note, if I iterate from t minus r to r minus t, an odd function, namely rho mg x rho d rho, I get 0. So I want to substitute the bottom term, r minus t, I'm going to substitute it t minus rho, r minus t, I want to make it t minus r. I can always make this t plus r, plus, of course, the integral from t minus r to t plus r, but t minus r to r minus t, which was the remainder, but that's 0. Not too tricky. I just used the oddness of r, m of r. But of course, I don't want to know r times m of u. I want to know u. So I divide by r. And how do I recover u? I take the limit as r goes to 0. Recover u of x t in the limit, r goes to 0, as one does with spherical means. And that gives us an interesting formula. For example, that first expression, the integral r going to 0, so r is the little increment. R, and since it's t plus r, r is like delta t. So that first term turns into the time derivative, the t derivative, of an expression involving f. All right, so it's interesting. So let's write that down, and I want to formalize it into a theorem. 4.6, and it's Poisson's expression for the solution of the wave equation. N equals 3. And it's my equation 3, which is u of x t is equal to, now I have to take a limit as r goes to 0 of this expression. The first term, I said, is in fact a derivative. So it's a d by dt of, but a derivative not of m of f at x t plus r, but of t m of f. So it's a derivative of t m of f at the point x r equals t. Isn't that right? The second expression is a little bit easier because as I take r to 0, the integral is from t minus r to t plus r, that is a distance, a length, 2r, and I divide by 2r, I just evaluate the integrand. So plus evaluate the integrand at t, at rho equals t. So plus t mg at x t. That's it. Picture of the solution is always useful. Let me get me some axes to make it look credible. Now my picture is going to have x1 in it, it's going to have x3 in it. Maybe I'm going to drop x2 because I also want t in it. So blackboard is two-dimensional. I can maybe look at perspective drawings in three dimensions, but four is already past us. So let's drop a dimension. And I want to know what the solution is at, say, some point here, which is going to be the point xt. Well, this solution formula tells you to do the following. Look at data, but not data at x, but data centered at x, but in a sphere of radius t around it, and then average, and then multiply by t and take a derivative. And the same with g. Look at data on a sphere centered at x at radius t. So here's my center. That's x. And now I take a cone. Let's make a nicer looking cone. And I could take a sphere in R3. So that's a two-sphere, S2, radius T about X. Right? It's a two-sphere, radius T about X. This distance is T. And I average my M. I average my F on that sphere, and I average G on that sphere. If G is non-zero, I just multiply that average by T, and that contributes to the solution there. If F is also non-zero, I take that M off by T, and I take a derivative, and then I put the solution there. That's the solution expression. Very pretty. So, corollary. 4.7, which is, if the initial data satisfies G is, well, let's see. I need a G and C2 so that when I do this, U has two x derivatives. I'm not being optimal, but at least being realistic. And F in, now if F is in C, I put F in here, I take a derivative, and then I need something with two derivatives. So if F is in C3, of R3 then the spherical mean solution is a classical solution of the wave equation. Then this is a classical solution of the wave equation 1, which is the equation we're seeing. Now, we can see explicitly, oh yes, thought experiment. In one dimension, we had data F and G, and we did some manipulation to make a big capital F and a capital G, the left moving and right moving components. And that manipulation was algebraic. That's not true. It also had an integral. But the solution was as regular as the data. Here, there's a derivative in the solution formula. So if I start with a solution with a certain number of derivatives, at later time, it's not guaranteed that it maintains the same derivative. The solution formula takes the derivative for you. So in pointwise norm, the solution is less regular, possibly, very possibly less regular, than the data you were given. And in fact, what I wanted to do is take this, and this is needs the chain rule, so I'd like to rewrite it just to show you that. So this that says U is equal to, let's do this. Let's do that one. It's actually, let's do this one first. It's 1 upon 4 pi t squared. That's the spherical mean. I'm going to make it the spherical mean of G. So let's see. The integral of x minus y equals t, the spherical mean of tg of y. Let me just do it like this. And now I'm going to look at the result of the expression for f. The t can get differentiated, or it can leave the t, and the f, the mean of f, can get differentiated. So the way to express that is the t is differentiated when I put in f, but it also could be t grad f of y dot unit vector, so x minus y over mod x minus y. Close parenthesis, d surface area on the sphere of the y sphere in y radius t. And you see explicitly there's a derivative. Just to remind you, measured in a Sobolev norm, we don't see, so on square integral averages, you don't see this loss, this formation of data, of points which are more singular than the data. So measured in the Sobolev norm, the energy remains bounded. That is, and we described this already using the Fourier transform. If I look at the energy function as a function of t, so that is the following thing. I take 1/2 integral of the time derivative of u squared plus all space derivatives of u squared dx. I integrate over all Rn. This is an n-dimensional result. I get the same answer as if I did this over the initial data. So the initial data for this is g squared, plus the initial data for this is partial x of f squared dx. So you see no loss of derivatives when you use the square integral norm for the function. But if I expect it at each point and not in the mean square sense, it can be singular, more singular at different places. Okay, so you don't lose in Sobolev sense, but you do, and you do in the in the soup norm sense. Now, it leads me to ask to do a problem. So let me look at my problems. So exercise. So here's problem set 3. Problem set 4. Problem 1 is consider solutions in R3 but radially symmetric. Consider x in R3 but radially symmetric solutions. And then what I want you to show, so I want you to show me two things. The first thing is show that solutions have the form, that any solution has the form, the following form. U of R T is equal to 1 upon R, F of R plus T plus G of R minus T. So I want you to describe F and G, in particular in terms of the initial data. So about that, in terms of F, the initial data is F, of course, but I want that to be only a function of R and G, only a function of R. So that's going to give me a radial solution. I want an expression for it. And of course, this is easy to read. This is the outgoing component, and this is the incoming component, because R is distance from the origin. So signals that are going out toward the rest of outer space, and the signals that are coming toward us from outer space. And then two, second part of it is, I want to give you specific F and G. So given F of R equals 0, why not? G of R equals, well, not 0, 2. How about simply the cutoff, the characteristic function of the interval 0, 1? That's a function of R alone. I want you to do the following. Show that the solution U of RT, which we're given by this expression, by the way, does the following thing. Well, in fact, we see that the solution involves especially in one dimension, the solution involves an integral of the G data. So, in fact, the solution U is going to be continuous for a little while. So U will be continuous in R for 0 less than or equal to t less than 1, and u r of t forms a singularity at r equals 0 when t is equal to 1. Forms a singularity and forms a jump discontinuity. And so that's caused by focusing. That is, the solution starts out not having a jump discontinuity. It starts out being, well, it's Lipschitz. It has a corner, but then at time t equals 1, it has a jump discontinuity. So describe that to me. That's a manifestation of this presence of this extra derivative. You might say the solution later on takes a derivative. Okay? Good. Let's move on. Property of finite propagation speed. And the Sharpe-Huygens principle. Well, let's do the following. Let's assume that the support of F and the support, so the combined support of F and G, is compact. And let's just make it bounded in a ball of radius R around 0 for simplicity. Then let's draw some conclusions. Then for time bigger than 0, And I guess we can also just do this backwards as well. So as soon as you have positive time or positive negative time, the solution, especially the solution given by this formula, can't be non-zero very far away from the data. So that's the way to say that, is that the solution u of xt is only non-zero in a region formed by the union of the light cones starting over every point in BR naught. So how do I say that? So I draw a picture, I guess. So here's time. Here's my x1 and x3, and here's the ball radius r, about zero. And then I take any light cone in there, and I draw, and I draw it. I'm only drawing it up, drawing it down. Drawing past is too hard. And then I take the union of those light cones, and that's where the solution can be non-zero. Another way of saying that is let's take an xt outside that union and draw its backwards light cone. Because, in fact, inspecting the solution formula, to understand the solution at that point xt, I have to look at the average over spheres of radius t around x in my initial hyperspace. And if x is bigger than t, so what I want to say is, this is the x greater than r plus absolute value of t. This is r plus t. So if x is distance from the origin is greater than r plus t, then the solution is zero. So to make this right, the solution is only non-zero in a region x less than r plus t. That's just an increasing cone. It's not a Melita filter. It's some other sort of coffee cone. I mean, it's a cone with a base chopped off to be a ball of radius r. And so u is guaranteed to be zero out here. That's the weak Huygens principle, or finite propagation speed. So let me now add to this picture. And I'm going to add to this picture by doing the following. Draw these two lines and make an inner circle here. See that? And now I want to look at Huygens. And I want to put some data inside this inner thing. I'm going to call this H, maybe in honor of Huygens. And I want to draw the backward cone, the backward light cone from it. So this point can be somewhere here, say, but here's the backward light cone. See that? That's the backward light cone from that point. Is that pretty clear? And that backward light cone is the domain of dependence of this point on the initial data. And it is a sphere, an n minus 1 sphere of radius t around the point x. And so the set H, which is all those xt's, such that, well, I first want t greater than r to get myself out of the interaction region. And then I want x less than t, but minus r. My notes have a mistake. Then that's H. That's this region inside here. Then what happens is the domain of dependence of this point, That is, I take this point and I look at the initial data on which the solution at this point depends, and it forms a sphere, and the sphere entirely surrounds that ball, BR, in which I have data, and doesn't touch it. So it intersects only zero information. So the solution is zero. So our statement is, just from looking at the picture, or from other reasoning, in H, the solution U of X, T, is also identically equal to zero. And that's expression of the Sharpe-Huygens principle. Very pretty thing. So, good. That's simple but important. I want to tell one more thing before we go on to n dimensions. Right, I want to do one more thing which is I want to talk about decay, so time decay of solutions. So let's I want to think about that, but actually I want to formulate a statement. So I'll make it a lemma, lemma 4.8, which is, I have an F and I have a G, but let's, for simplicity, set F to 0. In fact, it's the general case from some manipulation I'm going to do later. But let's, for the moment, just set F to 0 for simplicity. So do that, F0, and consider G, I want G to be in twice C2 of R3. So we have a classical solution, and I want the support of G to lie within the ball of radius R about 0. So the situation in my picture. Well, if I just look up at my table, which is sitting happily here, and it's interpreted here, the solution formula is pretty easy to write down. So then, U of X, T, is equal to 1 upon 4 pi T. Over there it says 4 pi T squared, and then it's T times G of Y. So I'll do the cancellation. Integral over X minus Y equals T. G of y dsy. And what I want to say is, therefore, how big is U of x t and L infinity of x? So I'm going to move t along, and every t I'm going to look at how big it is in x. And we have an estimate just based on this up here. And I claim it's less than a constant times r squared over t, forward and backward in time, really, that's the same formula, times g L infinity. And I owe you a proof of this. So, let's see. Now I'm going to do a proof again by a sketch, but this time I'm going to put in only x1 to x3, and leave t out of the picture for the moment. And let's see. Here's x1, x2, x3, and here's the ball radius r, about zero, in which my data is non-zero. And then I want to take some other xt, and probably I want to take t relatively large, I want to know how big is the solution. So let's take some x out here, and a sphere of radius t, and of course, if the sphere doesn't match this distance to the ball, then the solution is zero by that picture, by the Sharpe-Huygens principle, the Huygens' principles. So let's consider the interesting case where the radius of the sphere is about the distance from the origin of x. So there's now this huge sphere, I'll draw a piece of it, about this point x. And that intersects the initial data. And my intersection is, of course, a curve, but it's really a piece of surface, because that's a two-sphere intersecting a three-ball. And what I want to say is, how much of that sphere can intersect the surface? It's kind of a geometric question, but the amount is no more than about r squared of area, right? You're not getting a lot of sphere. The sphere looks more and more planar, so it's more, the biggest it can be is more or less the diameter, modulo a little bit of geometrical factor. So what I want to say is this amount of the sphere is actually intersecting that ball, and that's a fixed amount. So the surface area, I'll just quantify that, of the sphere radius T about X, it's a two-sphere, intersect the place where I'm picking up non-zero data, is about r, constant times r squared. Doesn't depend on time. And so therefore, if I look at that u of xt at that point, so I want to know what u of xt is at that point, it's no bigger than 1 upon 4 pi the size of t. I'm now copying down this formula times the integral over x minus y equals t, but it's only y in the ball of radius capital R about 0 of g, and we're taking an estimate, so it's the absolute value of g, dsy. And of course, that's bounded by some constant made out of the 4 pi and the geometrical factor times r squared, because that's the dimension that we'll get of the ball. There's that t floating around, and the L infinity norm of g. It's as simple as that. So in some sense, just geometrically, the solution has to decay. It makes a certain amount of sense, meaning that you create a disturbance, and as I said, the energy is fixed, but the disturbance is confined here, but it spreads out. So the same amount of energy, it's not growing, is spread out over a larger sphere. Something has to give, and actually what gives is the L infinity norm, and other things too, but the L infinity norm is a principal way to see that. My next topic is spherical means in odd dimensions. So in all odd dimensions. But in fact, it's another topic, and it's a little bit early for a break, but finally for a change you get a break that's on time rather than delayed. Let's take a short break and come back and learn about spherical means in general. Once we do all odd dimensions, we'll then do even dimensions, then we'll do the Klein-Gordon equation. Then I think we'll have had enough for the day. So that's the plan. let's start again. I want to talk about spherical means and odd dimensions. Well, here we have Darboux's equation waiting for us. So I think I'm in equation 5. I want to solve d by dt squared u minus, equation 1 has always been dt squared u minus Laplacian x, u equals 0. U initially starts out with a profile f and a momentum g. And it leads me to try to solve, I think it was my equation 2, for the spherical mean of u, dt squared m of u equals partial r squared plus n minus 1 over r partial r m of u. And of course, m of u x r, when time is equal to 0, I want that to be the spherical mean of f, and the d by dt of m of u of x r 0 is supposed to be the spherical mean of g. Nothing could be simpler. And, of course, the philosophy was, from the beginning, x is n variables, but r is 1. And it's easier to solve an equation in r and t rather than x and t. And three dimensions was very easy. A little bit of algebra reduced the three-dimension case to one-dimensional case. So the statement in odd dimensions is more algebra. Does this reduction. Now, what I should say is more algebra does this reduction in dimensions, in odd dimensions. So I need some help with that algebra. So let's have an entirely algebraic lemma, an entirely algebraic proposition, which is, I guess we're at 4.9 already, which is basically a technical calculation. So I'm going to look for h of r, and it's technical calculation, but only for r's, only in one variable. So I have a function h of r, and I'm going to need a bunch of derivatives of it. So let's say it's certain differentiability. I'll have it k plus 1, I think is what I need. So let's let h be k plus 1 times differentiable in r. Then I want to write down two identities. So there's identity 1. If I do the following thing, I take h, I multiply it by 2k minus 1. I then operate on it by partial r, 1 upon r, partial r. That operator, k minus 1 times. And then I leave a little bit of space, and then I take two derivatives. Well, you do a lot of operations, and it equals something neat. And that something neat that happens is that it's equal to r derivative of h times r to the 2k. And then you operate 1 upon r partial by partial r to the k many times. And let's see if at least the number of derivatives add up. I have k many derivatives. I have k plus 1 many derivatives. And here I have k minus 1 plus 2 many derivatives. So at least it has a chance of being right. And it's interesting that it's a monomial and a monobial. There's not a lot of, the Leibniz rule gives you sums of terms. Here is only one term in each side. But if there's a 1, there's a 2. So I want the following thing. Oh, that's my next page. Which, if I take an expression such as r to the 2, notice this is even, so I'm going to make it odd. R to the 2k minus 1h. And I operate by partial r, 1 upon r, to the k minus 1. Then that, no luck, it's not a monomial. But it is a simple polynomial. So it's a sum. J equals 0 up to k, well actually up to k minus 1. Coefficients bjk, rj plus 1, partial r to the j, times h. And let's see, does that work out? When j is equal to k minus 1, the number of r derivatives are k minus 1 derivatives on h, which is the max number of k minus 1 derivatives on h, if all these r's ignored all those r's. Otherwise, some r's hit those r's, and the derivatives are less. And we're not going to need all the betas, but we're going to need some of the betas. So where beta, if j is equal to 0, I'm interested in it. So beta 0k is equal to 1 times 3 times 5 times, etc., up to 2k minus 1. Often this is called 2k minus 1. It's not the factorial, but the double factorial, just because it comes up sometimes. Proof. Problem set. Number 4, don't we have a problem 2 now? Let's prove the identities, the two identities. By induction, for example. To tell you the truth, it's harder to know that they're true than to prove that they're true. So, now let's go back to n equals odd dimensions. And let's consider u, a solution of the wave equation, so u of xt. So a solution of our equation 1. What should we do? What should k be? I want n minus 1 to be equal to 2k. And I can do that if n is odd, and I can't do that if n is even. Well, k could be a half integer, but I need for this identity k to be an integer. So if we do that, define a new v. Remember, v is a function of x, r, and t. In three dimensions, it was r, the spherical mean of u. So here, it's not going to quite be that. I'll take the spherical mean of u, that's a function of x, r, and t. Then I'm going to do the following thing, r to the 2k minus 1. Let me check. If n is 3, this is 2, 2k minus 1 is 1. So it'd be r to find the spherical mean of u, the three-dimensional case. And then I want to apply this to this, 1 upon r, partial r, k minus 1 times. Use the proposition. And I'll find that partial r squared of v, which of course is partial r squared of 1 upon r partial r k minus 1 of r to the 2k minus 1 of m u. But the proposition says that this is equal to 1 upon r, partial r, to the k times r to the 2k, partial r, of m of u. And if I now take one of these and apply it and leave the rest outside, so it's 1 upon r, partial r, the k minus 1 times, now let's see what happens. I take one of these 1 upon r, d by dr, partial r operators, and I differentiate here. What I'll get is r to the 2k minus 1 partial r squared m of u. That's if that one r I took hit this, but it could be that it hits this. It's plus 2k r to the 2k minus 2. Because it hits this, it goes down one, and then it takes it down another. It's 2k r to the 2k minus 2 partial r m u. And that should look familiar to you, because it's supposed to be equal to 1 upon r, partial r, k minus 1, times r to the 2k, 2k minus 1, times partial r squared mu plus 2k upon r, partial r mu. And if this is a solution to, if u is a solution to the wave equation, it's this is d squared by dt squared. So that's equal to 1 upon r, partial r, I have to catch up all that preamble, k minus 1, that's that, and r to the 2k minus 1, r to the 2k minus 1, that's that. And then this, if u solves the wave equation, is partial t squared u. Partial t squared, not u, but m of u, sorry. Isn't that interesting? And now let's look what this is. The t, partial t squared, of course, commute through all that. And what is it? 1 upon r, partial r to the k minus 1, r to the 2k minus 1, mu, that's v. XRT. So V, which is this somewhat complicated combination, solves the one-dimensional wave equation. So V solves partial T squared V minus partial R squared V equals zero. Well, it's combinatorics that has been worked out through the ages. So it's nice to have historical hindsight. And so therefore, V should satisfy XRT should be given by 1 half VXR plus T0 plus VXR minus T0 plus 1 half integral from r minus t to r plus t partial tv at x rho 0 d rho. That's the D'Alembert formula. With what initial data? Well, clearly v of x r 0 is going to be this operator, 1 upon r partial by r k minus 1 times on r to the 2k minus 1 times the mean, spherical means of f. Those are functions of x and r. And partial tv when x, r, when t is equal to 0 should be same thing, 1 upon r partial r, k minus 1 times r to the 2k minus 1, all this stuff getting it going, m of g, that's a function of x and r. Very straightforward. But now we want our solution back. So we have V, which is some complicated thing. I want U. So, solution is U of XT. Isn't that equal to the limit as R goes to 0 of a spherical mean of U of XRT? Well, that's equal to the limit as r goes to 0 Now, let's have a look. To get u from v, let's just examine this, because I have to take a limit of this. Right? So, how many powers of r are possible? 2k minus 1, I'm going to always have minus k minus 1, that leaves k left, and then I'm going to differentiate r many times. So there's always, whatever I do with that derivative is always going to be a positive number of powers of r. And if there is a, if I'm taking the limit as r goes to 0, and there is a, and there's going to be non-negative powers of r. And if I take the limit as t goes, as r goes to 0, and there's a positive powers of r, then that vanishes. So I have to make sure that I only pick off the 0 powers of r. So just look at that long enough, and you'll find that this is the limit of v of x r of t over, hang on a minute, let's see. What do I want to do? This operator, that's what I want to do. This operator is that operator in 2 on H. And so the positive powers of R are when J is, the higher powers of R when J is higher than 0, and we get 1 power of R when J is equal to 0. So in order to get the value of G out, what I have to do is divide by R to get rid of that last power of R and its coefficient, which is B0K. Where, remember, 2K is equal to N minus 1. So it's if I do that, I have to take the limit as r goes to 0, let's take that constant out, 1 upon b naught k, and now let's just put this expression that I had in for v. Well, it's v of x t plus r minus v of x t minus r. The minus sign because I switched r and t minus r to r minus t. And it's odd, divided by r. Okay? Plus 1 upon 2r, integral from t minus r, t plus r, of partial t v of x rho time equals 0 d rho. Close. Which, then you take r in the limit, this is a t derivative of an x, v at 0, which is expressed in terms of thanks. I'll drop the half here too. In any case, the expression I get by doing this exercise is, what is B0K? It's N minus 1 double factorial times partial t derivative. And now what does v have in it? Well, it has a bunch of 1 upon, of course, these are, when I take t plus r, t minus r, these are the spherical means where the variable r is really the variable t, right? So it's d by dt of 1 upon t, d by dt to the n minus 3 upon 2, t to the n minus 2, spherical mean of f at x and t. That's the first term. Plus the second term doesn't have this extra t in front. So it's 1 upon t, partial t, n minus 3 upon 2, t to the n minus 2, spherical means of g at a point x, t. Close parenthesis. That's the expression I want. And this is a equation, I've lost my equation number. I think it's 7. So that's just an expression that I'll formalize by saying there's a theorem. It's 4.10, which is for f having a certain number of derivatives, I'm going to need n minus 1 upon 2, because that's the n minus 3 upon 2 plus an extra 1. And g only needs n minus 3 upon 2, it's a 1 less, of Rn. Then expression 7 gives a classical solution to the wave equation. One. Similar analysis as in the three-dimensional case. Solutions satisfy finite propagation speed and the Sharpe-Huygens principle. Interesting. Further remark is that solutions can be quite a bit more irregular than the initial data, taken on in a pointwise sense. So, just reading from the formula, which is taking a lot of derivatives, solutions can be quite a bit more quite a bit less regular than the initial data. The amount of such quantified by the number of derivatives you take of it. Here you're taking an extra n minus 1 upon 2 derivatives. So in three dimensions, that's an extra 1 derivative. But in higher dimensions, definitely extra derivatives. I'm wondering whether I should give the next problem set problem, which is, why not figure out the expression for the solution in five dimensions, which is the next easiest one, if you feel like doing that. Why not? So problem set four, number three. Work out the case n equal 5. What about Feynman? Yeah, his comment, yes, we're mathematicians. I was just thinking, I mean, what are the proposals for string theory? It says fermions should be 10-dimensional theory and bosons should be a 26-dimensional theory. It seems to me both of those are even, so I automatically don't like them. Just from principles of Sharpe-Huygens principle. But you have to know that to argue. So what about the even dimensions? So the wave equation in even dimensions. Well, this is a method dating to Adamard. So the method is called the Adamard method of descent. So I guess it starts by the obvious observation that if x is in even dimensions and you increase one dimension, it's odd. So let me say that a little bit. Well, let me say what will happen. We'll see finite propagation speed, but no Sharpe-Huygens principle. But finite propagation speed. So let me think how this goes. Surely if for x in Rn even, let me call it x prime. And that's going to be our variable in our even dimensional space. With data, okay, with equation, partial t squared u is equal to Laplacian x prime u, or this minus this is equal to zero is how I've been writing it. And data u of x prime 0 is equal to f prime, f of x prime, partial t u of x prime 0 is equal to g of x prime. Why don't I just make the observation, why don't I just extend x in, which is going to be x prime and then the nth dimension, x n plus 1th dimension, in R, so a point in R n plus 1 odd dimensional. So we extend x and f x prime g x prime to be constant in x n plus 1. Nothing prevents us from doing the trivial. And now, general principles, suppose I solve the wave equation in such a setting. Well, the solution is going to have to be, so the data is invariant under translations in xn plus 1. And the equation is invariant under translations xn plus 1. So the solution, or at least, the solution should be also invariant under translations in xn plus 1. And so what we're going to do is just use that and evaluate at xn plus 1 equals 0, and we'll get a solution expression. So let me, and then I want to make that explicit. So let's do this. So I really want to, so let's illustrate this. I guess illustrate with n is equal to 2, that is, n plus 1 is equal to 3, which is just the case that we've done explicitly. So that says x is going to be equal to x prime x3. That's in R3. And then I have to solve the wave equation x in R3 with, so the wave equation partial t squared u minus Laplacian u is equal to 0 in R3. With data u of x, 0 is equal to f of x prime. And partial t u of x, 0 is equal to g of x prime. And then we have a solution, which we've derived to be u of x t is equal to 1 upon 4 pi t integral x minus y equals t of g of y dsy plus, I did the g first, now let me do the f, d by dt of 1 upon 4 pi t integral x minus y equals t of f of y dsy. And the only thing I want to add to this is f and g don't depend on all y's. They only depend on y prime. It's particular, it's not data of compact support. Let's see if I can make a picture. So let's see, do I have a picture here? Yeah, so what I'm drawing now is three-dimensional space. So this is going to be x1, x2, and x3. And now I'm going to give data on I'm going to give, for illustration, data in the ball of radius r about 0, but in x1 and x2, that's surely not of compact support because it's data which is fills up this entire cylinder. But nonetheless, it's data for my solution. And now I want to find, and I want to find my solution at the point. So the solution. So let me take x at a point at which I want to know the solution. Well, the solution is going to be constant in x3, so I might as well take my point x here. So here's my point x prime 0, x prime 0. And around that point, I have to draw a ball of radius t. So let me draw this ball of radius t. That's where it hits the x1, x2 axis coordinate plane. But it's a ball. It's an S2, so it also goes like this. In particular, even though this is relatively close to the ball of radius r and t is very relatively large, it's still intersecting the data on this region. And so you see automatically from the picture that Sharpe-Huygens principle does not hold. It's obvious that finite propagation speed will hold, but the Sharpe-Huygens principle will not hold because the sphere has hit the data actually in two places, here and here. So what I want to do is coordinatize that to give us a better expression for our solution. So let's describe the sphere. So it's a sphere radius t about the point x prime 0. But it's a two sphere. It's a 3 minus 1 dimensional sphere. So this is in R3. Well, that's t is equal to x minus y. Isn't that the sphere of radius t? X minus y. You have to look at all y such that its distance from x is equal to t. Well, so it's coordinatized by either root of x1 minus y1 squared plus x2 minus y2 squared. We've set x3 to 0 because all we need to know is the solution in that 2 plane, but y3 is non-zero. So hence, I can describe y3 as functions of y1 and y2, which is y3 is equal to, well, you take choice of the plus or minus hemisphere of t squared minus, of course, x prime minus y prime squared. And now I have to integrate over the sphere. But the sphere in the upper hemisphere and then the other sphere in the lower hemisphere, I want to coordinatize by x1, by y1, y2. So I'm going to express y3 as a function of y1, y2. So I've expressed that. Now I have to give you the surface differential. So dsy, and a little calculation will show, oh, and that's, of course, going to be 1 plus partial y3, partial y1 squared, plus partial y3, partial y2 squared. And a little calculation will show you that this is going to, oh, and it's the differential, so it's dy1, dy2. A little calculation tells you that this is t over y3, dy1, dy2. So remember, we're taking x prime in R2, x3 is equal to 0, and then let's rewrite that expression for u. U of x prime t is equal to, well, I have a 1 upon, there's this 2 floating around. Well, let's see. There should be a 2 floating around. I have the upper hemisphere, and I'm going to get the same answer as the lower hemisphere. So if I only integrate over the upper hemisphere, I have an extra 2 floating around. So then, therefore, 1 over 4 pi t has a 1 over 2 pi. I'll deal with the t later. Double integral. Oh, I'll deal with the t now. It cancels this t. Double integral, I should over x prime minus y prime less than t. because I'm parameterized the hemisphere by the disk of g of y prime over length of y3. Well, I chose the upper hemisphere, so it's plus the square root of t squared minus x prime minus y prime squared dy prime. No spherical area. This is the surface area of the disk parameterizing the hemisphere. And the other piece is partial by partial t of something, which is pretty similar. 1 upon 2 pi, the t goes away, x prime minus y prime, less than t, f of y prime, t squared minus x prime minus y prime squared, dy prime, close. That's an expression for u in two dimensions. It doesn't work. Oh, what would happen if f and g depended on x3 as well, y3 as well? Well, these wouldn't be expressions in y prime. They'd be expressions in y3, which we have to give as functions of y1 and y2 because we're on that sphere. It would not be invariant. We would have an expression for some sort of wave equation, but it would depend non-trivially on x3. What zero? Well, then those depend on x3.
Yeah.
Well, then I don't get a solution which is independent of x3. So then Laplacian prime plus partial squared x3 has a partial squared x3 component in it. So it's not solving a two-dimensional wave equation. It's solving a three-dimensional wave equation with a delta function on the on the x3 equals 0 plane, coordinate hyperplane. So it's a solution of some equation, but it's not a solution of the equation we want. But always good to keep suggesting. Okay? In general, in even dimensions, so general even dimensions, even dimensions n, here's a theorem. And we're at theorem 4.11, as far as I can tell. So let f, I need a certain number of derivatives of f, n upon 2, Rn, f in Cn over 2 of Rn, g I need in Cn minus 2 over 2 of Rn, then u of x t is equal to, and there's a formula for it, 1 over n minus 1 double factorial, because of course we're going to descend from n plus 1 dimensions. And I'll give you what that expression is. There's a partial t. This is where f comes from. 1 over t partial t to the n minus 2 over 2. Then I have expression. That's that 2 floating around from both hemispheres. The unit surface area, the surface area of the unit ball in Rn plus 1 and n plus 1 dimensions. Double integral. X minus y less than t. F of y. I'm skipping the primes. Root t squared minus x minus y squared. Dy. That's the f part. Plus 1 upon t, partial t, n minus 2 upon 2. Doesn't have this extra dt, though. 2 for the two hemispheres, omega n plus 1. Double integral over the disk, x minus y less than t. G of y over the surface area, t squared minus x minus y squared, dy. Close. That's it. They satisfy finite propagation speed but not the Sharpe Huygens principle. And just to emphasize that, I'm going to draw on this draw on my drawing that here I have the data, and the data sends out light cones, right? Maybe I'll make a new drawing. Here's time. Here's x2 and here's x1. Now I can make a real drawing because we're in two dimensions. And my data is going to live here in the ball radius r about 0. And I want to know a solution here. Solution at here at a point x, t. And I draw the backward cone, and it could be the backward light cone the edge of the backward light cone could be doesn't hit the data, because it could be that x is closer to 0 than t minus r. So it could be in that region H. That is, if I send out any characteristics from those light cones emanating from my disk, it could be that this that this does not hit the data. But of course, that integral which gives us the solution is not over the sphere. The integral is over the ball radius t about x. And that ball, of course, intersects the set on which the initial data is non-zero. So I want to add to problem set number 4 which is how well do solutions decay in n equals 2? We have less than t. Here's the n equals 2 solution. Something's wrong. Oh, no, let's see. I worked on this and I found in the middle board. Here it is. This is the n equals 2 solution. So this is x prime minus y prime is less than t, so it's integral over the disk. So use that expression. So use, this must be expression 8 now. Use 8 in n equals 2 to discuss the L infinity decay in x, decay rate of solutions. Good. We're moving very well. I have just enough time to discuss the Klein-Gordon equation. And that goes as follows. I want to study the equation now, our equation 9 of the day. Partial t squared u minus Laplacian u plus a mass term, m, what people call a mass term, m squared u. M equals 0 is a wave equation, and that's like a that describes propagation, say, of photons or massless particles. When they have mass, that's often signified by m. M squared M is often the mass of the particle mediated by the field U in quantum field theory. Mass of the object. And I want to have, I'm considering X in Rn, and of course T in R. And a typical initial value problem is to specify just like the wave equation. So typical initial data. You want to specify u of x0 to be some initial configuration f, and d partial t u of x0, some initial configuration, some initial momentum g. And what I want to do is talk about a method for finding a solution using spherical means. So, method, that's really another method of descent, which does the following thing. Instead of u, form the following thing. Take x is equal to, how do I do this? I drop my primes, now I'm going to put them back. X prime is an Rn, x prime u. This is x prime, and x prime. And I want x to be x prime xn plus 1 in Rn plus 1. So I want to jump up one dimension. And I want to define, now I have a solution u as a function of x prime and t, and I want to define a v, a function of x prime, xn plus 1 and t, to be the following thing. U x prime of t, e to the I m xn plus 1. Now let's see what this does. Now we just simply define this. When I was using the wave equation and doing the method of descent, I took my solution, took my data, and I just extended it as a constant. I'm not doing that anymore, and I'm extending it with some non-trivial xn plus 1 dependence. But let's just see what happens. So then, partial t squared v is equal to partial t squared u, always times e to the I m xn plus 1. Because the t doesn't see that. However, the Laplacian in x, that is in n plus 1 dimensions on v, is equal to Laplacian in x prime on u times e to the I m xn plus 1 minus a term, because I have the xn plus 1 squared derivative on this. So I get a minus m squared minus, because twice I, times u to always times e to the I m xn plus 1. So it happens to be Laplacian x prime minus m squared on v. Isn't that interesting? And so what I want to do is extend, so the solution method is extend the data f prime of, prime is not derivative, f tilde of x, I want to be f of x prime e to the I m x n plus 1, and g tilde of x is equal to g x prime e to the I m x n plus 1. And find a solution of, this is wrong. So dt squared v and Laplacian v. So if u satisfies the Klein-Gordon equation, this is supposed to be a u times e to the I m x n plus 1. Sorry, fine, I'm going too fast if you didn't correct me for that. So if u solves the Klein-Gordon equation, this equals this, this on u is equal to this on u, then v satisfies the wave equation. This on v is equal to this on v in one higher dimension. So solutions of dt squared v minus Laplacian in n plus 1 dimensions, v equals 0, on the xn plus 1 equals 0 hyperplane, solve the Klein-Gordon equation. Solve our equation 9. That's what I wanted to say. And so, in particular, let's not do the n-dimensional case because you can do that yourselves, but let me just write out what it looks like in two dimensions. So let's make n equals 2 case, so n plus 1 equals 3. Then u x prime and t is equal to u tilde is equal to v of x prime 0 t. So you set, right, you set x 3 equals 0, and then we're going to recover our solution. And then I'm going to find, by just writing out the spherical means in R3, u x prime and t is equal to 1 upon 2 pi integral over, now it's a sphere in R3, but I'm going to do the same reparametrization of a spherical shell, but now this will depend on its, because the data now has g of x prime e to the I m x3, that will enter in the data because the data has special dependence. So it's going to be integral over x minus y, or x prime minus y prime less than t, because I'm parameterizing the spherical shell, and it's 2 pi rather than 4 pi because there are two hemispheres, each one's going to give me the same answer. G of y prime, 1 over root t squared minus x prime minus y prime squared. It's the same differential, dy prime. But I don't just get 2. I'm going to get e to the I m yn plus 1 plus e to the minus I yn plus 1 from the lower hemispherical shell. So I'm going to get a cosine. So we get a cosine of m root t squared minus x prime minus y prime squared. Close. Interesting expression. That's what comes with g. And if, of course, I get a similar one from f. d by dt, 1 upon 2 pi. Integral over the disk. F of y prime. Cosine of m root t squared minus x prime minus y prime squared divided by root t squared minus x prime minus y prime squared dy prime. Close. Interesting expression. Quick question. Does the Klein-Gordon equation satisfy the principle of finite propagation speed? Inspect the solution. It's over. I find the solution at xt by integrating over disks in x of radius t. So it's finite propagation speed. Does it satisfy Sharp-Huygens principle? No, you're not in two dimensions. You're integrating over disks. You're not integrating over spheres. Third question, how would you find the solution of Klein-Gordon in three dimensions? You'd apply descent from four dimensions, but in four dimensions to get a solution, you have to descent from five dimensions, so you do it twice. Well, such things can be done. Let's stop here. Well, you could either use the expression in four dimensions or derive it from five dimensions. You just descend twice.